Welcome back to Athens Happens. I'm Izzy Keller, managing editor of The New Political.
And I'm Megan Arnold, social media coordinator and staff writer of The New Political.
Athens Happens is a podcast brought to you by The New Political, a student publication dedicated to explaining the nuances of Ohio University, Athens, and state politics.
You can find new episodes at thenewpolitical.com or wherever else podcasts can be downloaded.
President Joe Biden is halfway through his first term after a lengthy political career. There's much debate over his age, effectiveness, and future as we head into the 2024 election season.
Today, we are going to ask Assistant Opinion Editor Zach Donaldson and Opinion Writer Danny Mernon about their opinions on how Biden is doing.
Okay. Hi, Zach. How are you?
I am good.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, my name is Zach. I'm currently the assistant opinion editor here at The New Political. I'm a sophomore studying political science, law, justice, and culture. Hopes to go to law school.
All right. Hey, Danny.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, Danny.
Well, I'm Danny. I'm a sophomore here at OU, opinion writer on The New Political, studying journalism, strategic communication with a minor in political science and an intended certificate in political communication, and I hope to move to D.C. after I graduate to work in political consulting.
That's very good. Mm-hmm. And how would you both say you identify on the political spectrum?
I am like an establishment Democrat, probably. Maybe a little bit more left than moderate, but I would say pertinent to the conversation, I probably fall where Joe Biden does on a majority of issues.
All right, Danny?
I describe myself as a moderate Democrat, maybe in terms of being a pragmatic progressive.
So each of you, I don't really care who goes first. What are like the three top things that you like value in a politician or, you know, politically generally?
Any politician. Effectiveness in office, integrity, which is severely lacking in most politicians, and I'd say moral leadership.
One of the first things I'd say would probably be public transparency. I think a politician who is open with the public about just about everything they do in office and out of office, which can include on the campaign trail, like when they're holding events, when they're holding town halls, you want to be accountable in just about every way. Honesty. You should not ever lie to your constituents. And then I would say effectiveness. When you're in public office, you need to get stuff done. You can't just be there to get a large social media following or create headlines.
So you both value effectiveness in public leadership. Do you guys think that Biden is – I'll go back to that in a minute. What are your overall thoughts on Joe Biden, just generally speaking in, like, let's say, like 30 seconds or less?
Yeah. For some reason, I think current public opinion is like Joe Biden's the kid no one wants to sit with at lunch. Obviously, conservatives are not fans. But many members of his own party, I would say just from general dialogue I have at OU, especially progressives, are like, oh, he's practically a Republican. I don't like him. And I just can't ascertain why. I think when we look back in 10 years, we'll see him as a great president, probably top 15 or 20. I don't think he's done anything abhorrently offensive, and he's passed some really consequential legislative action and taken, I think, decisive international action that a lot of presidents haven't been willing to do.
Yeah, I agree with one of the things you said there about how you can't understand why some people on the left would say he's practically Republican. When you look at what he's done, the legislation he's signed, he is the most progressive president this country has had for the time period in a very long time, which deserves a lot of credit, because when he was elected, he wasn't elected on this big, like, liberal wave or anything like that. It was a pretty modest mandate he was given. So overall, I think he's actually been really effective, and he's exceeded my pretty mild expectations. I didn't really believe he'd be able to get as much done as he has.
No, yeah, honestly, to hop off what you said there, I think that if Bernie Sanders and, like, Elizabeth Warren were not candidates in 2020, we'd be calling Joe Biden the most progressive candidate in American history since the New Deal. I find it funny, a lot of the moderate posturing people ascribe to him.
Yeah, so it seems like you both pretty much agree on that. If you guys had to pull out Joe Biden's strengths and his weaknesses or downfalls, what would you consider?
I'd say his biggest weakness is he's not interesting. And that's what makes me sad. I maybe this is a little silly, but I don't really particularly care to be excited to watch the news or to like have a beer with the president, right? Joe Biden is a very standard bread and butter politician. It's what we're used to. But I think that's what hurts him polling wise. I think it doesn't energize a lot of the base. And I think also his, you know, style of speaking, mannerisms are easy to attack from a conservative lens. But as a politician, as someone who's actively passed and made policies, that's his biggest strength. I think he's been one of the most effective in corralling huge legislation with a very slim legislative mandate, kind of making the most of what he has. Because let's be frank, Democrats have not had some crazy majority in Congress. It's been the thinnest possible in the Senate and like a handful of seats in the House.
Yeah, I think definitely Biden being able to like just work within the system of Congress and in government has definitely been one of his strengths, you see, because he's gotten a lot more done, I would say, in his first term legislative-wise than Obama did in his first term. And Obama had these massive majorities in the House and the Senate. Well, Biden has, like you said, had very slim ones. So a lot of that obviously comes from his like extremely long career in the United States government, which he definitely plays up a lot. Like, I'll say that one of the things I've noticed is I wouldn't classify it as a good relationship, but he certainly worked a lot better with Mitch McConnell to get some 60 votes and some of these big pieces of legislation to pass the Senate than I thought he would be able to. So credit to him for that, obviously, because I don't think McConnell is a very easy person to work with. And I think you saw that during the Obama administration when legislative progress just completely collapsed after the Democrats lost the Senate. But I would also say he's an effective messenger, and I don't think he gets enough credit for that, especially when you look at the things he says about democracy and the right to vote and protecting our elections and whatnot. Because I, up in the lead up to the midterms, there were so many people just like on the right and left, just like criticizing him for not focusing enough on these kitchen table issues and stuff like that. But he kept talking about the fact that we actually did have like an attempt to overthrow the United States government and that people should not be forgetting about that. And when the midterm results were all in, it turned out that was a pretty effective message. All the candidates on the Republican side who were just lying about the outcome of the last election, all of them in competitive races lost. So I think he doesn't get enough credit for his messaging skills.
Yeah, I think I would point there. I don't know if it's as much a result of Joe Biden as the Republicans just taking an AR-15 to the foot. Worst messaging possible from that party. I think their approach with the whole big lie, focusing on really non-substantive issues as a opposition party, you know, it should be really easy to pick up seats when your opposition party has control of both chambers of Congress and the White House, is really weak. So I think Joe Biden did take some advantage of a very weak Republican slate of candidates. But I'd also agree that his moral messaging on elections has been fantastic. And I think that's the most key issue we're facing today, because ultimately, if we don't have a effective, healthy, functioning democracy, we can't get any of the necessary change we want passed.
No, you – oh, go ahead, Danny.
Sorry. I was just going to say that I totally agree with you about point about the candidate quality and the Republicans definitely like helping with the midterm results. But candidate quality hasn't ever really been the Republican strength. And those we've seen weak Republicans win big races. I mean, Donald Trump was the president before him, and he was pretty much considered left or dead on Election Day 2016. We all know what happened there. And time and time again, we've seen weak Republicans win races they weren't supposed to win. So I think that's definitely an element to it, but I think Biden just keep on hammering those main points definitely helps a lot. And I think I think also one of his strengths is, and one of the things I've noticed as well, is like you mentioned, he's not popular. I'd go out and say that I think for the foreseeable future, any president, Republican, Democrat, is going to have a hard time getting out of the mid to low 40s in their approval rating for the majority of their presidency. But I don't think Biden kind of attracts the same amount of animosity a lot of politicians do, prominent politicians. You may dislike his policies. You may dislike the way he does things, but I don't think there's a lot of personal hatred towards him in the way you saw Republicans have against Obama and the way you see Republicans have against ex-Speaker Nancy Pelosi, against Hillary Clinton. And I think that definitely helps him and the Democratic Party as a whole a lot.
I would 100% agree. I think that the approval ratings we're seeing at presidents are just more indicative of the polarized time we're in than the actual, you know, job they are doing in office. And yeah, like I can't find something that's been incredibly offensive that Joe Biden has done that has spurred like these amazing creative criticisms. Like the best things I hear are like, oh, thanks for the gas prices, Joe Biden, or let's go, Brandon. It's really weak, silly schoolyard insults they're able to hurl. And I mean, like, that's the best they have to offer in an election. I think it's funny. I think he's been pretty masterful at evading actual substantive criticism, especially compared to his predecessor.
So you guys are both very big fans, I can tell. I mean, Zach, you've said multiple times that you are. Danny?
When I talk about politicians, I try not to classify myself as like a big fan of the person themselves. I either approve or disapprove the work they do. So yes, I am very much like a fan of what Joe Biden has done as president, but I think, and this is a bit irrelevant, but I think in general, it's not a great idea to idolize politicians.
I think you make a really good point with that, because you guys were talking about like Trump, and I was going to ask you, I'll ask you when I'm done with this, but I think that it's like normal and healthy to be pretty moderate when talking about Joe Biden's approval ratings. I think if you're a president and people have like a pretty, maybe not neutral, but not a strong opinion either way, it's probably more normal than having people very against or very for. And I feel like that's what we're very much used to. And then, Zach, you said earlier that Joe Biden's boring, basically, or just not as interesting. But I think it's really hard to be interesting. And I think it's really hard to appear like, you know, to be this like energetic person when the person preceding you
is Donald Trump. Yeah.
I also think that like when he was Obama's VP, like they were like best of friends, like everybody loved them together, and like everybody saw him like having a good personality. And then as soon as he came as like the front leader, everyone's like, okay, no, he's boring.
No, yeah, I think I will say posturing wise, I'm not talking about physical policy. I think he's perceived as a moderate and he's perceived as more old guard, which there's some truth to, especially with his track record. But Bernie, I guess, akin to that wing would be the more exciting pick for, I think, a lot of young Democrats and liberals. But I'm telling you, when you look at physical policy and track record, I think there's like not a super negligible difference between what their aims to accomplish are. So I'd say that's why I'll back away from fan. I don't think standing.
I know. I was joking. Yeah. You say that as a joke all the time. I was kidding.
Oh,
was
absolutely. Kidding. I mean, I think it's funny because he's just, I've never met someone who's like, I love Joe Biden, because it doesn't exist. But I'm very happy, I would say. I definitely approve of what he's done in office. I can't find specific major actions that I would castigate. The whole document thing is annoying me. That's been consistent with both parties, but I can't find huge criticisms of the guy.
Other than his classified documents? Wow.
Well, I mean, he cooperated. Here's the thing, too. Like, compared to Trump. Trump, like, locked thousands in his Mar-a-Lago home and was like, no, I have the right to these. Look, these documents are mine. No, Joe Biden cooperated, notified officials. It's bad. It's bad optics. But I think that they're two separate situations.
I just want to know how this happens. But that's not this topic. My next question for you would be, Joe Biden, when he was elected, was pretty much postured as the anti-Trump. We come from this point where there's so much instability, so much just pure just craziness. And then, you know, you get this guy in who's been around forever. He, like Trump, is older. You know, there's less of a focus on what he's going to do and more of a focus on getting one guy out of office and getting another guy in. Do you think that, you know, because of that, people had lesser expectations for him, or do you think that impacts his presidency at all?
No, the bar was lowered the minute Donald Trump was elected president. I think whoever was coming in next was going to clear that in most people's, well, obviously not those who are ardent supporters of Trump, but I would say for moderate Americans, liberal Americans, it's a pretty low bar to clear. So I think he had lower expectations coming in, but I wouldn't even compare him to his expectations, just any president, I think what he has been able to do in office has been remarkable. And I think we will look back fondly on him as probably one of the more consequential presidents in the modern era.
Yeah, I would say that when he was elected, I think most people probably thought of him like as the opposite of Trump, like as like a solution to Trump rather than just a successor in that regard is a way. Like, I think there was a lot of expectation that his job as president was to fix a lot of the damage a lot of people, myself included, would say Trump did to the United States institutionally in terms of like returning civility to government, in terms of putting smart people back in key roles, in terms of treating, you know, other people with respect and not making remarks that were beneath the position of the president of the United States. So I think maybe that helped him a little bit when he has suddenly been able to get all this consequential stuff done, particularly on the legislative front. Obviously, the job of president includes a lot more than that. And his foreign policy agenda, for example, has certainly not been, boring, you could say, the way. There's definitely been a lot of stuff that has happened. A
couple things.
Not the least of which is the war in Ukraine, which I think that's the way he's handled that has been one of the, if not the,
I think that might be
most
the, like,
important things of his presidency.
Key mark. It's been tremendous, in my opinion. I think it's been scaled, reasonable approach, and it is making a tangible difference on the ground. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, you guys think he's an effective president. What are some reasons to why?
Yeah, I think he's effective at working within the institutions he served in for a long time. I think he's a strong negotiator. He's able to work with a slim majority in Congress. I mean, Joe Manchin sways with the wind. I wouldn't even call it a majority in the Senate to pass really strong, effective legislation. I think on the international front, he's decisive and he's a leader. I specifically commend one of the biggest controversies of his presidency was the pullout from Afghanistan. I commend that. And I think his speech after that was fantastic, saying, listen, this might not be the most popular decision, but I don't want to be responsible for the loss of more American life. I thought that was a strong moral decision. And one that, you know, past administrations were not willing to take. I would also say, you know, to further my point, I think he has backed away from some of the more neoliberal assertions that, like, more recent Democratic presidents have had, specifically Clinton, Obama, and moved us in a progressive way that I'm proud of.
Yeah, I think it's just when you look at what he's gotten done, and like I said, you talk about legislative wise, I mean, he signed infrastructure, he signed COVID relief, the first sort of consequential gun bill this country's had signed in like 30 years, protection for gay marriage, the semiconductor bill for technology made in America. Yeah. There's a lot. Postal service reform. I could keep going, but it's getting off the top of my head right now. But yeah, I think you like the Ukraine situation, you look at that, and I think that's a very good sort of example of how he sort of used his leadership abilities to achieve an objective. Like the United States was the leading force to get people to rally around Ukraine and commit to supporting them for the long run, which countries are still doing right now, even as we approach the year anniversary of when this war started. And it doesn't appear that that's going to change, because that obviously has extremely significant consequences geopolitically, which could be felt for quite a long time, even post Putin is wise. So it's important that like we have a good structure in place to make sure that Russia does not win this war, because the consequences of that would be dire. So I think that's just one example.
I think it's also such a breath of fresh air to have someone, you know, who's like our head of state actually support democracy and like moralism. I mean, Trump literally, what was it? I trust Putin over my own intelligence sources. It was ludicrous. And I think there's a insane sense of decency and normalcy that's been restored by having someone that actually knows how to handle public office. I hear the, you know, insult career politician thrown around a lot. I like having someone who knows what they're doing, especially the top position in government.
As president, I think it should be a career politician. Maybe not every other office, I would disagree with that, but is the most powerful person in the world. Yes, I would want someone who's been in government for a very very big portion of their lives and knows what they're doing.
So while you guys agree with maybe everything that Joe Biden has done so far, is there anything that you wish that he would have done that he hasn't done yet, or that maybe you don't think he'll do? Danny, go ahead.
Yeah, so one of the things about him that I wish would be different, and this isn't something I see changing, something that's much of a surprise to me, because he is nearly 80. Like I said, he wasn't elected to the broad mandate, but I would like to see him be more feisty about some of these sort of political issues that are more important, have more consequences. Like, I'll admit I was a bit disappointed with his response to the Roe v. Wade ruling. I thought he should have been much more upfront about how wrong that was, in a way. And I think a lot of other Democrats have been better on that front than he has, because this isn't just like a policy matter. The way I see it, it's a human rights matter, where you are seeing literally women having basic privacy rights being taken away from them. And I think he hasn't treated it like the urgent threat it is, because this is a healthcare issue. This isn't just about abortion. And you see Republicans, they're not going to stop there. Like, sometime down the line, they're going to start calling for birth control and all these other things that are just going to have just a terrible impact on whatever. And he talks about how extreme the Republican Party has gotten on the sort of election stuff with denying his election win, but he doesn't talk about it at all on things like, well, I would say he actually has talked about it all on abortion. I just think he needs to be more aggressive about it. Like, the percentage of Americans who are pro-choice is consistently getting higher because people realizing really this thing isn't that big of a deal. It's a woman's basic right to privacy. What's this protect it? I would say the gun thing is another matter. And I know that, like I said earlier, he signed the first semi-significant gun bill in 30 years. But when you have little children getting massacred in school buildings by weapons that are designed exclusively to massacre soldiers on the battlefield, I don't think giving Republicans respect on that matter is appropriate, because they absolutely do have blood on their hands. And that's a sentence that when inevitably sometime within the next 23 months, there is another mass shooting, because inevitably there will be, and a lot of people die. I would like to hear him be more aggressive on that front by saying that if you don't support these things, you are evil.
Yeah, I'd agree with you of the seriousness of the overturning of Roe, but I think his response was frankly pretty good. His, as I understand it, and if I get fact-checked and owned, I would totally appreciate it, he embraced overturning the filibuster and codifying Roe v. Wade into legislation in Congress, which I think is a perfectly reasonable federal response. I think he could play hardball with Republicans more. I think he could be, you know, more virulent in his attempts to admonish some of what's being done there. But I don't know. I don't know if I have specific recommendations. I think he's his finger in the holes there. Culture war wise, I would love to see more action federally, especially as it relates to critical race theory and all these non-issues that conservatives love to bring up. I think from the top rung, I would love to see him kind of sit down and tackle that issue, because I think that's where Democrats are getting killed at the ballot. If we're talking about paychecks and is my life better today than it was however many years ago, I think he nails most of them. But I think conservatives have a strong suit currently by confusing the issue and taking a lot of like religious and sociocultural fireworks, so to speak, into the mix. So I'd love to see more dialogue and combat on that. I think he could be a lot more effective both at the ballot box and as a moral leader if he addressed some of those issues.
Yeah, the culture war thing is definitely interesting, because I think he does a good job of staying away from a lot of that. there are a lot of Democratic members of Congress who don't do a good job at staying away from those type of things. And some people would say, well, no, they shouldn't be staying away from it. These are very important issues when we talk about like a lot of the critical race theory debates. And then you talk about trans student athletes in bathrooms and stuff like that, where the debate is always just going to become virtual and whatnot. Like, obviously, there's still ongoing debate over like classrooms and stuff like that. And then there's been debates over drag queen story hour and whatnot. And I think he's done a good job at just like staying out of that stuff, because at the end of the day, like, he's been doing what I think he was elected to do. So I hope that that he will continue just doing what he's doing with that, and that the party will follow his lead.
I guess I just disagree. I think that there has to be some level of messaging against those issues for us to actively combat them. I think if we sit on our hands and allow Republicans to paint ridiculous narratives on those issues, it's going to hurt them at the ballot box.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say that, like, a lot of these things, like, they're taking have been, like, way overblown. Like, I'm not educated on critical race theory. I'll admit that. But from what I understand about it, I think the Republicans are taking what is a very, very wide, expansive view into the history of racism in America and making it so, like, oh, the Democratic Party hates your kid if they're white or whatever, that they want to discriminate against white people. Like, they seem to be taking this very expansive thing and just turning it into something very overblown. And I think, like, he's definitely set points like, this is not what critical race theory is.
Oh, yeah, that's precisely what I want him to do. So I think maybe we might agree. I think that, like, okay. I think those issues need to be set.
Like,
down.
Yeah, I think, like, you can come out and say that, like, critical race theory is, like, a college level concept that should be taught at the college level. It's not being taught like in your daily school district and stuff. I know there's been isolated incidents and stuff like that. But yeah, I think for the culture wars, he's been doing good with just, for the most part, staying out of that. Because I don't think you want to draw attention to it either.
Yeah, I guess it's just, I think there's already so much attention drawn to it. I'd like to see some combat, but I think it's a pick and choose, fight your battles with it.
Very interesting stuff, guys. Mm-hmm. We saw a little disagreement
there.
We
almost fought.
Oh, my God. Okay, so really quick, and Meg, you can answer this too if you want. Do you guys think Joe Biden, I'm going to go around the table, do you guys think that Joe Biden will run for re-election? Danny?
I think he probably does.
He will?
Probably.
Okay. Zach?
Yes, and I don't know how I feel about it.
We'll go into that in a second.
Awesome.
Meg?
I don't think he will.
Okay. Zach, why?
Why I think he will, or why I don't?
Why you don't think it's a good idea?
I don't necessarily saying it's a bad idea. I think if I'm just talking about who I want in office, I'm totally fine with 4 more years of Joe Biden. I think it's a bit effective and a nice sense of normalcy. My concern is that given polling, and given the lack of incitement among the Democratic base, I don't know that he'd beat Ron DeSantis. I don't know that he'd beat a strong firebrand conservative candidate. I think he'd beat Trump again. Trump might be the worst candidate in political history at this point to run. But I don't know. I think that having some young energy or an alternative for the Democrats to combat a potential DeSantis run, because I think that's at this point the most potent threat to Democrats for the White House, would probably be the better option. Who that is, I don't know. I don't feel like the Democrats have a strong bench right now. But that would be interesting to discuss.
Well, also, Nikki Haley announced that she's running for, or she speculated, I don't know if she announced.
She's going to announce in mid-February. That
yeah,
was a report.
Yesterday,
today.
Yeah, yesterday it was announced that she's probably.
She's washed up. She's not, yeah.
All right. Danny, do you have anything you want to add on your why you think Joe Biden will run?
Well, my guess is he probably does. Like, I won't be, like, shocked if he doesn't, because he is 80 years old, and that absolutely comes in the equation there. But, like you said, the Democrats don't have a very deep bench. And, well, I actually put that, I guess, a bit of a different way. I think they actually have a lot of strong, like, potential candidates out there. The problem is that when you look at what it takes for a Republican to win a presidential election, the coalition they have to assemble is a lot less diverse. It's much smaller than the coalition the Democrats have to assemble. The Republican coalition is overwhelmingly white. It's majority non-college educated. I would say it tends to lean older. Well, the Democrats, they want to win an election. They have to get good youth turnout, which is a challenge in itself. They have to get good turnout among non-white voters, which isn't always easy. They have to get people excited about the candidate. And, like, Republicans aren't always excited about the people they vote for, which always frustrates me because, like, the way I see it, and I guess this is a bit of a different story, is that voting is, like, it's your basic civic duty, right? Like, you do it, you get done with it. Like, it shouldn't be this thing where you have to put so much thought into it about stuff. But I think as of right now, Biden's probably the only candidate comes to mind who I think could put the coalition together to win another term for a Democratic president. I think there's definitely candidates who could do better among certain demographics, but would also do quite a bit worse among others. Like, one of the people I really like is Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan. Okay. I think
we'll get to that in a second. You guys want to succeed? I love Big Gretch. Well, I think, okay. Sorry, Danny, do you have anything else you want to add? We'll talk about who you guys want next, though.
I don't think I have anything on that front.
All right. Megan, do you want to say why you don't think he'll run?
My only reasoning was I think he is to the age where he's getting a lot of backlash from people for being too old to run again and even for running now and becoming president now. But that was my only.
Cool. So I'm going to ask, well, my last question to you all, other than anything else to add, is going to be, who would you like to succeed Joe Biden as president?
I would love, in a perfect world, which we do not live in, a Gretchen Whitmer, John Fetterman ticket, assuming he's healthy.
That's Pennsylvania.
Well, I think it's a good ticket balancer. I think they're both young enough that it's not going to, like, violently frustrate people. But they have a significant and serious accumulation of years in public office. I think Gretchen Whitmer has been incredibly effective as an executive in Michigan. I think John Fetterman excites a lot of disaffected Republicans and moderates. If you watch the Pennsylvania race, I think it's a strong electoral coalition. I think they would be solid to govern, and that would be my dream ticket. But also, if it's Biden-Harris again, I got no problem with that.
Yeah, I think this is definitely a question, and it's a question that's going to have to be answered very soon because, like, we know Trump's already announced he's running. You're going to see another major Republican enter the race here in just a few weeks, and there's going to be a bunch of people after that. It's not going to be a small field on the right side by any means, but the Democrats have to start assembling a field too if Biden isn't going to run. So naturally, the question is, if someone's not going to run because they're too old, you say, oh, well, the vice president probably runs. And I don't have any personal quarrels with Kamala Harris. I think a lot of the criticism she get is, of course, due to sexism, stuff that...
Oh, 100%.
But I will also point out that when she ran for president, there was a reason why she couldn't make it to Iowa, why there was a reason why two other women made it much further than she did in the cycle, and you can't blame that on sexism. Like, I don't think she has that great of political instincts, and those are what you need to win election. But I think if she does run, if Biden doesn't run and she does run, just because of her being the sitting vice president, anyone's going to have a very hard time beating her.
I actually disagree with that. I think she's had one of the most abhorrent approval ratings of any vice president I've seen. And, like, again, I don't get it. I don't get the vitriol, the hatred. Do I find her to be, like, this super warm, exciting figure? No, but she doesn't have to be. I think a lot of it's I think she gets the, like, she's the Hillary Clinton complex of stereotypes. And I think misogynistic assault, where it's, like, because she's not a warm or inviting person or doesn't, you know, fit these, like, particular feminine stereotypes, there's a lot of backlash against her. But, like, what has she done that has warranted so much hatred? I cannot ascertain, but... Simply, I think it's a liability to run Kamala Harris. I don't see her being a particularly strong candidate for 2024.
Me either. I don't see that either, which is unfortunate because, like I said, I don't have any personal problems with her. And I think a lot of the stuff, like, it is sexism. It is the fact that it is a lot of sexism. But she doesn't have that great of political skills, like I said. But still, that doesn't necessarily mean that she's not going to get the Democratic nomination if she seeks it, and because Biden may decide not to run. She is the sitting vice president. She will have more name recognition than any other person who will run. Like, she isn't my preferred candidate. Like I said, like, I've been a big fan of Gretchen Whitmer for a while. In Michigan, I think what you saw in the last election is, like, she was at the top of the ticket during a very successful election cycle for Michigan Democrats, and it was the same way in 2018. So in terms of, like, actually delivering winners, she definitely has that front to her. But I do worry that, like, some of the weaknesses would come along with her that would come along with candidates you saw in 2020, like Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar, who were very popular among certain demographics, but with younger voters and non-white voters, their numbers were not good. And those are numbers that you need to be good if you want to win a presidential election. So I think that's why it's important that Biden needs to make his decision soon, so we can have a primary, a healthy primary, where we can see who the strong candidate is going to be.
How do you feel about Pete Buttigieg?
I think I have nothing. I think he has the weaknesses that I just mentioned. I remember in 2020, his numbers among young voters and voters of color were very, very poor. And that's a big concern. And I don't think that would go away. And I think his tenure as Secretary of Transportation, there's a lot that's happened during it. And even if he isn't at fault for what has necessarily happened during it, there's some fair ways to say that he hasn't necessarily handled everything very well. And I don't think he has enough experience.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think he'd be kind of a liability and a disaster for as much as he's being propped up. Incredibly smart, capable, intelligent human being. But yeah,
I like him a lot.
I wouldn't want him.
He's pretty much been the face of every airline disaster that's happened in the past, I don't even know, like month and a half. So I'm going to stop you guys there. Anything else that you'd like to add about, you know, your opinions as college students, as politically active, I should say, college students on Joe Biden and, you know, the future of the presidency or his legacy?
Yeah. I said it at the start of the podcast, and I'll say it again.
Happens to the best of us.
I think that we will look at the Biden administration, barring anything crazy in the next 2 years, as a relatively effective return to normalcy, where a lot of consequential legislation was passed on many fronts. I mean, most consequential climate change legislation we've seen, massive infrastructure reform, a lot of big bipartisan bills with the gun law, great international posturing with Ukraine and Afghanistan. I think he will be looked back upon fondly, and that most of the criticisms levied are pure, like, conceptual posturing. Either he's too moderate, which frankly I don't believe is true. There are more liberal people than him in the Democratic Party, but he's by no means Manchin or a conservative Democrat. And then that he's old and unexciting, which, while I can't refute, I don't really care.
All right, Danny.
Yeah, I think he's been a successful president so far, and a lot is going to be different in the next 2 years. He doesn't have that full control government over more if the Republicans having the House. And there are definitely going to be issues like the impending debate over the debt ceiling that's going to be coming up here in a few months. That could be a very major issue. The war in Ukraine, obviously, is going to continue on for most likely the duration of his presidency. That doesn't seem to be ending anytime soon. So the decisions he makes there will definitely have a big impact on how he'll be known on the world stage. But so far, so good. I think he's handled the economy thing really well. Obviously, he's been put in a pretty tough situation with the gas prices and the inflation, which aren't really in his control for the most part. A lot of those have to do with other factors.
OPEC and like 30 other factors.
But I think he's handled everything pretty well. Not perfect by any means, but so far so good, like I said.
All right. Thank you both.
And that's a wrap for this episode of Athens Happens. Make sure to check out thenewpolitical.com for more podcast episodes and other content. Thank you, and until next time.